and when we understand more about how the brain works, it's going to help provide a little bit of a compass in the midst of the chaos. So let's follow the sound, and what we'll do is we'll track the sound 3 or 4 times, and then we'll go straight into a silent meditation for 10 minutes. So you can either follow your breath or simply pay attention to the stillness and start to separate yourself from the noise and distraction of your mind and the environment, and pay attention to the stillness that comes when we focus on being aware. be easy with the meditation. It's a little bit like being out in a field and being very, very still and very quiet and watching the wild animals from a distance. Bring your attention to the breath. And when I ring the bells, we can end the meditation. That was a short one. That was only about 6 minutes. It felt longer, right? Mm-hmm. Is it warm in here? Should we open? Do you want to open a window? Yeah. All right. So, who knows the different parts of the brain? Anyone?
One that like senses smell, and then there's like hearing, and then there's,
I feel like there's something like peripheral.
The medulla oblongata is what connects.
Does anyone have any idea about how the brain develops? Okay. Yeah. Okay, good. So we're going to start. This is going to be an easy. We have an easy model, which is the hand. So the reason why we're learning about how the brain works is because understanding how the brain works is fascinating, and it explains some of the way we feel the way we do, why certain things work to agitate us and certain things work to calm us down. And so we can start to work with them. Now, imagine that this hand is our brain. So you actually have three brain centers in the body, believe it or not. There's a brain center around the gut. the stomach and the intestines. There's a brain center around the heart, and then there's the gray matter. And the brain center around the stomach and the heart actually also have certain types of neuronal networks that are different than the ones in the brain in our head. But when you say, I felt it in my gut, or, you know, I felt it in my heart, it's not just a metaphor. It's also related to something physiological. But we're going to focus on the brain in our head. Now, what happens is our spinal cord brings input from the gut brain, the heart brain, and all the other neural pathways in our bodies, brings it up through the spinal cord into the brainstem. So we have this whole track that's pulling in all the sensory input and giving it to our brains to process. Now, we have more or less five parts of the brain. The first part of the brain, which is situated really in the center of our heads, and it's pretty small, and it's called the reptilian brain. It's called the reptilian brain because it developed something like 300 or 400 million years ago. I forgot, we have to, 300 million years ago. So, and that's really in the center. It's protected by everything. It's the first thing that develops in us. It develops in us while we're in utero. And then everything else forms around it. Now, the reptilian brain, it's old, it's primitive, and it's responsible for certain very basic functions, which are fight, flight, and freeze. And that's what keeps us safe. And the very early animals develop this in order to keep them safe. Now, just because we're 400 million years later doesn't mean we don't still have those responses. So we do, and the responses that we have are really primitive. They activate, we have sort of cave person memory, and we react, we have a little bit more sophisticated overlay, but we respond with aggression. We respond with fear and retreat, or, you know, like a deer caught in the headlights, we just panic and freeze. That's all coming from the reptilian brain. We are going to have those responses. We're very biologically programmed. We're not going to be able to do anything about having those responses. What we've developed is we've developed different parts of the brain so that we're not always responding from this unbelievably primitive reactivity. And you can see it. I mean, you see amoebas. Amoebas don't have brains like this, but if you put an amoeba in a petri dish and drop saline solution, and they're gonna bounce back. We do that as human beings. And everybody does that. Everybody has those reactions, no matter how mature and sophisticated and self-controlled you are, you will have those responses. So about 100 million years after the reptilian brain developed, we developed the limbic system. Or we, these earlier creatures, developed a limbic system. So the reptilian brain is here. We have all these neuronal inputs coming up here. It registers in our reptilian brain. Our limbic system is the next one that develops literally on top of the reptilian brain and surrounds it. And that's the part of the brain that is responsible for connection, emotions. So there's danger. We want to fight or we want to run away. Then we feel. So we feel fear. We feel happiness. We feel love. We feel connection. And that's from the second part of the brain, which is interesting. This is also the part of the brain that holds our memories. So when good things happen to us, when bad things happen to us that register in our reptilian brain, we hold the memory of that in our limbic system. So that's why memory feels like deep in us. Now, on top of that, fortunately, we have an integrating function. Hi.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Did something pop out of that?
No.
Hmm. So what the, we don't actually think with either the reptilian brain or the limbic system. We think with what's called the cortex, which is around those two. That's the part that thinks, that's aware of our surroundings, that takes things in. That's the big part in the back of our head. Now, they've done a lot of complicated mapping in different parts of the cortex, are responsible for different parts of our cognitive abilities and different things that we notice, and you can actually, you know, they've actually done a lot of sophisticated testing. What all we need to know is that that's the part that makes us aware of so many things. It helps us think, reflect, and understand, and kind of start to synthesize our experience. But it's the prefrontal cortex, which is the little part of the cortex, which is like these two fingernails, that sits right on top of the limbic system, which sits on top of the reptilian brain, and this is the part that helps us integrate. So of all this part, this is the part that develops last. The cortex, by the way, develops after we're born. So reptilian brain and the limbic system are there in utero. The cortex starts to develop after we're born. The prefrontal cortex starts to develop after that. And that's why you see babies, and you feel like they're kind of in this bliss state, and they're not really, they're in a different universe than we are. And there's something very mesmerizing and fascinating about that, because they're not the same as us. This is the part, the prefrontal cortex, that gets activated when we meditate. So to develop this process of integration, we need to develop certain synapses that talk to each other. And then there's a coding on these synapses. It's like a mylar coding, which helps the synapses connect and touch each other. That's what we're developing. We're actually literally creating pathways. We're creating neuronal connections as we meditate. We're creating different ones that help us integrate. And so that's why when they do these, the Mind and Life Society has done all these studies of monks and nuns of all different traditions who've done a lot of contemplative practice or meditation, and they show different neuronal pathways and strength of neuronal pathways, because they develop this integrative function through habit. That's how our brains grow. They develop through habit. Now, we can have a very unsynthesized relationship to our emotions, which means that when we feel something, we just react. So if you feel something and you get upset and you just cry or you yell, and it's not very well thought through, it's not very integrated, it's not very rational, and it's not very useful or constructive, that means that our integrative capacities aren't that well developed. It's okay, we grow through that. We do learn. But you want to see that it is important to exercise this part of our brains and our bodies. If we don't, and you can see in individuals who haven't developed very well, you can see that they have irrational responses from a reptilian brain. You say something and they panic. Now, part of that we're going to get into next week has to do with what's happening in the brain in teenage years. It's not because adolescents are emotionally undeveloped. It's actually because we're going in this period of time, you're going through a growth spurt. And when you go through this growth spurt, what's happening is the brain is literally developing new capacities that didn't exist before adolescence. And when these new pathways start to grow, they're not very sophisticated yet, and they're not integrated. They don't have this coating on them to make them smooth pathways. So a lot of the things that you feel, you're responsible for what you do, but you're not responsible for what you feel and why you feel the way you do. And this is subtle, but it's a really interesting thing, because you start to realize that you can't expect a two-year-old to reason the way an eight-year-old can. They simply don't have the brain capacity to do that. You can't expect a 15-year-old to have the same reactions to certain stimulus and stress and input that a 50-year-old would have. And it's not just life experience. It's also literally the physiology of our brain. Now, it doesn't mean you can't be incredibly centered and intelligent and responsible for your choices, but you're working with a different set of cards. So I think it's kind of fascinating, because what it does is it takes you off the hook in a certain way that you can feel the way you do, and it also makes you much more responsible in another way, because now that you're starting to learn this about yourself, you're going to have to figure out how to cope with it. But most of it comes back to really learning how the brain works. Now, what we find when you start looking through sort of cultural anthropology and an understanding of gender, ethnic background, and certain preferences, likes and dislikes, which don't seem personal, most of them are not. Most of them are deeply encoded in the reptilian brain and from way, way, way back. So we want to become archaeologists of ourselves and start to see the layers of responses that we have. It is like in archaeology. We've laid down pathways from more primitive times that we still respond out of. And there's a lot of interesting ways to approach this, and a lot of things that will explain why we react the way we do to certain stimuli based on our gender, based on a cultural memory that is beyond just an individual memory. It's beyond what you learned with your parents. It is part of what is encoded in these very primitive responses that have grown up over 50,000 years of civilization and 400 million years of brain development. So do you feel more confused or more empowered? Who feels more confused? You do. Why?
Just too much.
Too much information. Who else said more confused?
Mm.
Yes. Why?
It's still a lot to learn.
It's a lot to learn. Where'd you get lost?
I mean, just in general, we're still growing as beings. Like you said, we're still developing that archaeological history. As a species, we're always developing and growing. There's no limit to our capacities, really.
Right, especially if you project another 100 million years into the future.
So you don't really know where we could be in the future.
No, we don't. We don't. Who else felt confused? Yes.
Confused. Is it science related or person related?
Which part?
Like our brain. Is it all science or is it?
Is it personal? It's a good question. It's both.
Yeah, but how is that possible? Science is life everywhere, but also very personal. Yeah, but if we develop the same brain, what?
These are really confusing questions.
Doesn't it change to different stimuli? So depending on your life experience, you're going to have different pathways formed, different people have different genes, evolution, and all that kind of stuff. So it is personal.
It's partly that. That's really good. The problem is that it's both. Now, at the University of Arizona, they have a conference, and I think it's a biannual conference now. It's called Towards the Science of Consciousness. And they bring all of the top neuroscientists and philosophers from, it's international. It was founded by this Australian professor named David Chalmers, who's pretty far out. He's hard to read, so I wouldn't necessarily look him up, but he's pretty far out. And some of this stuff is the soft problem of neuroscience, is how does the brain work? The hard problem of neuroscience is the question you asked. What made consciousness in the first place? Is it personal? Is it physiological? Is it evolution, you know, basic blind evolution in a Darwinian sense? Uh-oh, Miss McKay is locked out. These are questions that people are really thinking a lot about. And part of it, you have to look into your own experience and just really think about this. And then you go, are you programmed? Are you a robot?
No.
No. But how much of you is more programmed than you might think? So, I mean, take a classic, this is it's a sexist stereotyped example, but it really is rooted in this physiology. So generally, and I know it's not going to be politically correct, so I want you all to take this as an example and a way to think about this. Generally, men have developed this more externally aggressive, protective response. And women have developed a more nurturing response. Now, why is that? You go back to early Homo sapiens. When women were pregnant, they couldn't run after the saber-toothed tiger. They couldn't protect themselves. You know, when you've got a belly like this, you're stuck in a cave, and anything can come at you. So back in that deep physiological memory is the memory for women to protect and nurture, because that's what they could do, because they couldn't run because they were pregnant. And it developed in men this evolutionary capacity to protect and be the aggressor to keep at bay the wild animals and other invading tribes. That response is still in us. Regardless of our gender plasticity now and a lot of the things that people are thinking about, these types of responses are coded in this reptilian brain. So how much of it is personality? That girls have a tendency. Not all girls feel that way, and that's fine. But we want to look at these in really broad strokes and start to understand, like I said, that we're archaeologists of ourselves. So we have these layers in us. Now then we're going to choose to not identify with them, or we're going to have, things are more plastic now because we're not in those environments that are so physiologically programmed. So we're starting to lose some of that. So how much of it is personal choice, preference, memory, the things that happen to us? It's very confusing. What else was confusing? So, back to the brain. What does the reptilian brain do?
Fight, flight.
Freeze. Yeah. Panic. Yeah, like the bunny rabbit in the... And then what does the limbic system do?
Brain.
Motion. Good. And then what does the cortex do? Think. It's what thinks. And then the prefrontal cortex.
Synthesis.
Good. You guys are quick. You're not that confused. How would meditation help? What's that?
Synthesize the situation you're in.
Mm-hmm. So personally, how could you see that? Like, what can you imagine a situation that you always have trouble with now? that you get tripped up by, that you don't know how to handle, that feels overwhelming, that you could see might be able to be helped if your brain was a little bit more exercised. Can you think of one? Can everyone think of one? How many don't have an example? How many do have an example? Just checking. What's your example? You don't have one yet. Who has one?
I'm really bad at decision-making, and when I have to make decisions, it makes me, like, basically panic and do nothing.
Okay. What should I wear? Should I go here or there? What college should I go to? That kind of thing. Who should I call? What do you want to do this weekend? What movie do you want to see? Interesting. So do you think it's a decision-making thing? Do you think it's a preference thing? Or do you think you haven't quite figured out what you like yet?
I have anxiety over my choices. Like, I'm like, what if I do this? It's going to be like this. But then what if I hate it? And I really wanted to do that.
So the way meditation can help with that, so it's because it's an interesting, a lot of people suffer from that. Part of it is not being able to project enough into the future because the integrative function isn't there yet. So what's happening is you get stimulated in the reptilian brain. This is exciting, that's exciting, the other thing's exciting. You could do this, you could do that, they're going this way. And all of that is activating the very primitive system. And then you have all these emotions. You go, wow, that looks good, but what are they doing? And I don't know what to do. And your emotions are all confused. You start thinking about it, and that's fine, but it's not very helpful because you're not able to integrate. So part of that is just going, wow, that's really interesting. I'm probably going to grow out of this. So, but, and the other thing is what the way practice of meditation can help is you start to see that you're going to go through all kinds of experiences and none of them are going to last. So you could pick the wrong movie and it could be terrible and you could walk out. Or you could pick...
But then I would have wasted $10.
Well, you're cheating.
No, she didn't. She said something good. What's another example? Who has an example you think meditation could help? Yes. When you procrastinate, like about what? Doing homework, getting out of bed in the morning, doing your...
It's like I could do it if I actually wanted to. I was like, no, I could do it 5 minutes from now.
Right.
Then it turned into like 5 hours.
I feel like you could add the meditation as part of your procrastination. Yeah.
Well, you
don't think about what you're not doing, or you don't think about meditation?
I don't think about what I'm not doing.
You don't? What do you think about?
Uh-huh.
Maybe it's not there. Maybe I don't really have to do this. So some of the things won't matter in 10 years. Yeah. But some of the things will. But the thing that procrastination, probably the worst effect of it, is it erodes your sense of agency. Because we gain confidence when we act. We gain confidence when we follow through. An action could be sitting still, but we gain confidence when we follow through. So if we don't follow through, we lose confidence in ourselves. So that's where it really takes its toll. You know, whether you do exercise today probably won't matter in 10 years. If you don't exercise every day, for the next 10 years, it will take its toll. It might not show up until you're 50 or 60. and then you have osteoporosis, and then you're stuck, and you go, oh, gosh, no. I wish I'd done that when I was 16, 18, 20. So some things we just have to force ourselves to do. But again, part of that inability to make decisions is a lack of decision-making development. This is the part that enables us to make decisions. And, you know, adults who are well integrated, I'm not saying that all adults are wise, you know, certainly a lot of them aren't, including the ones who are in positions of authority. So we wouldn't have gotten in this housing crisis, economic mess, and all kinds of other issues that we have if we had had people who were better leaders. But generally, you're better at decision making when you're an adult because your decision making synapses have been developed. So you can. So part of the difficulty making decisions is also being in this growth period right now. So what you want to do is you start tricking yourself into making decisions. You don't wait for you to decide. You decide beforehand, and then you simply do what you decided. See, there's no way out. We always have to be responsible, so. What else? So who else has an example? Well, that may or may not be an integrative function. I'm not sure. You'll probably want to ask your friends about this.
Reptilian cortex is like taken over. She needs her integrative function to help her
cool down.
Turn into a bear.
Well, the thing is, we are going to get angry about certain things. And, well, probably not, but we can't pacify ourselves in the wrong kind of way. It's that we want to develop communication skills. Difficult emotions aren't a problem in and of themselves. Getting angry, feeling tense, being afraid, feeling grief, being lonely, feeling indecision, those things are going to happen to us. And meditation doesn't create this kind of bland, vanilla, flat line. It does make you feel a lot more. And then we want to develop our communication skills around it and our friendship skills around it. And getting angry, it's not the worst thing in the world, so long as we're not horrible to our parents, our teachers, our principal, our best friends, our not so best friends. But what that calls for is it calls for more responsibility. Because if you're just trying to not be angry, then that's a lot more simple to do. You just pretend you're not and ignore it. And then you don't develop agency and you don't develop as a person. So people who develop as people experience this, all these things, but they're able to manage them and learn how to manage them and learn the interpersonal skills. That's what we're not really taught. We're not really taught good interpersonal skills.
Agency
means that you're in control of your life.
Okay.
So that you have a sense that self-authorship, self-agency, autonomy. So good. We're going to meditate now that you've a little bit overwhelmed. Any other questions? Was it helpful?
Understanding the brain?
Yeah.
Kind of.
What was helpful about it?
Understanding that it's not just a mesh of things, that it actually has layers to it.
All right. Let's go. Great. All right. So when we meditate, we'll watch the breath and just forget about everything we just talked about. Just let it go. Don't try to figure it out. Don't try to figure out where you are and whether you're doing well or you're not doing well, or you're integrated or you're not integrated, or you have more to go. Just let it all go. Because there are certain things that, what's important, we are going to remember. You're not going to get tested on this. And you don't want to tie yourself up in knots. You just want to let it all be and see what happens. And we're going to talk about it again next week. So see if you can be relatively still. And we only have about 6 minutes, so... Just put your attention on the breath. See if you can feel the inhalation and the exhalation. Be easy with yourself. And be interested. All right. So I guess the thing to pay attention to this week is experiment with some of this and see if you can have more of a sense of humor around the things that frustrate you. So if you get angry about things, or if you're confused, or if you procrastinate, see if you can have a little more space around it and just be interested in it. It's not the end of the world. It's all part of everything developing. And if you can, practice for a couple minutes. It'll be good. All right. Have a good week.
Okay. You know, we can rearrange the library tomorrow morning. So just like clear a path for you guys to get out.